Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things testing and automation related. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. And today I want to share with you a webinar I was a guest host on for Sauce Labs called Test Automation Trends for 2016 and Beyond, Staying Employable in Changing Times. This episode's a little bit longer than normal. It's about 45 minutes, but I think it has a lot of information in there that really is going to add value to you if you listen all the way through. So let's just jump into it. Check it out. Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section. There are five key areas I usually look at every year. I do this at least once a year. I'm actually kind of a paranoid guy, so if I'm ever laid off or fired, I try to keep my skills up to date so that I'm able to get a new job fairly quickly and make sure that I'm not obsolete. So the first thing I do is I try to talk with as many people as possible. And like I said, one way I do this is to use my podcast, Test Talks. And I interview a bunch of different guests from a bunch of different industries. And anytime someone mentions a term that I'm not familiar with, I'll jot it down. And if enough guests mention this term over a certain amount of time, then I know that it's probably something I should look more into. Probably a year and a half ago, one of these terms was like microservices. A lot of people were bringing it up, and I've never heard of it before, so I jotted it down. So the next thing I do is I go to a job site like Dice or Indeed.com. And what I do, and this will be different from wherever you are geographically, but I do a search 50 miles from where I live just to be able to target certain companies to see what companies are around me and what skills they're looking for. So I'll type in that term, say microservices, and I'll see how many job postings actually come up for that term. So if I see a lot of jobs openings appearing in Indeed.com or Dice.com, then I know it's a skill that probably not only is it becoming more popular, but it's something that people and employers are actually looking for. So what I also do is I also go to Indeed.com Trends, and Indeed.com Trends keeps track of all the trends of keywords used by all employers over time. So I could see if this is a keyword that's being added and searched for more often or less often. So if it's more often and I'm getting hits back within 50 miles of where I live, it's something I definitely say, okay, I'm going to learn this within the next year. So just for validation, what I also do is I go to Google Trends. And Google Trends is a way of tracking keywords over time that people search within Google. So if it's a keyword that's also being searched a lot, I see if it's being searched more often or less often. And also, a lot of times I'll go to GitHub. So GitHub has repositories where I deal with Java a lot, so I'll go to the Java repository trending area and just see if there's any repositories that people are really excited about and something I may not know about. So that may be something else I'll look into. And of course, every year I look at industry reports. So there's some reports that come out every year, like the World Quality Report, the Zephyr Annual Report, and the State of Testing Trends, and Gartner. So I take all that information, and based on that information, that's what I work on within the year. And this is something anyone can do. Like I said, I do at least twice a year. I do a mid-year also, just to make sure that I'm more employable, but not only to make sure that I'm more employable, to make sure that I have the skills for my current employer. Because most likely, if it's a skill that's or a technology that's becoming more popular, I'm probably going to have to deal with it on my job that I'm working on right now. So it just makes me have a better heads up and be more ready for any projects that may come my way within my current job. So it's a win-win for everyone. It's a win for you, for your employers, and for yourself. And just a quick note, this is just a quick and dirty way. I'm not saying this is a scientifically accurate method of finding out certain trends, but I find it very helpful, and it's a good way to guesstimate the type of skills I think I should be focusing on. So a funny thing happened to me when I was putting together this presentation, and that is back in the old days, if you were a tester or a QA person, you were kind of looked down upon, and developers really did rule the world. And now it's kind of funny is that we're all testers now. And what I mean by that is when I first started test automation in QA, I remember this first row where everything was siloed. You had your business analyst in a different group in a different area of your building. You had your development, different group, different area of the building, testers and DevOps. Operations were usually through like a, I used to have a security badge even to talk to the production folks. So it really was siloed, and it was completely, everyone was independent. And so I think more people now are in this middle model where you really were working in more agile development processes, where we're working in sprint teams most likely, and that the developer and tester role is kind of almost morphing, or that they're closely working with one another within small sprint teams together. But I still see this silo of your operations and production folks. And I think in the future, really it's going to be emerging more of dev, test, and operations all in the same group. But not only all in the same group, I kind of see a merging of all the roles so that one person, and it's more of a role. It's not necessarily a role like you're a QA tester and you're a developer. It's more of just the activity that needs to get done within that sprint, especially for QA. And the reason why I say that is most sprint teams I know have more developers than testers. So developers have to start doing more testing. I think as this accelerates, I think it's going to be more and more, you're going to have more of this blurring of the lines between who's a tester and who's a developer. So here's a great quote from Paul Garrod. He is one of the people that I've interviewed on Test Talks. And he said, testing is not a role. It's an activity with a deliverable. And I kind of agree with that. More and more companies I speak with, people that I speak with, they really are moving away from you are a tester and that's all you do, and you're a developer and that's all you do. And it's more of this is just an activity that needs to get done within the sprint. It's part of your definition of done. Testing is part of that. Whether it's a tester or a developer that does the testing, it doesn't matter. But it is an activity that does need to be delivered at the end of that sprint. I think a lot of this really is being driven by this move to shift left. I don't know if you've heard of shift left before, but it's a process of trying to find defects as early in the development lifecycle as possible. And it really helps the teams from day one to really focus on to uncover defects before they write even a line of code, so as early as possible. And so with more and more companies making the shift left in the development process, testing and automation, they're no longer just a QA activity because it's done up front now rather than waiting to the end like we did with waterfall processes. So it really means that the roles of developers and testers are really beginning to blur. And I think one of the reasons also is because of the shift left where we're trying to find defects as early as possible. It's not just waiting to after we get the requirements, develop it, and then wait for this other group. This other group handles testing, and we don't have to worry about it. It really is a full team effort now, and you're trying to find it earlier rather than later. And the earlier you find defects, the better. And another driver that I've seen with this shift left movement is DevOps. Now, you may have been hearing DevOps more and more, and a lot of the trends I talk about here may not be a new technology, but it seems to be more that more and more people are trying to implement it. And so DevOps really is a huge movement, I think, that's going to almost become just like Agile, where it's no longer just this DevOps thing. It's going to be just the way we develop software. If you look in Indeed.com once again for Indeed Trends for DevOps, you see that the people or the employers looking for people with DevOps skills is just skyrocketing. Also, if you look in Google, under Google Trends for people that are searching for the keyword DevOps, that's also going through the roof. And the same thing with DevOps things like continuous integration. Also, it's just growing more and more. And there's a report, the World Quality Report that I mentioned earlier, 67% of companies say they're using DevOps principles. So it's a growing trend. If you're not involved in any DevOps types of activities yet, I think you're going to be. So it's definitely something you want to have on your radar this year if you haven't already. So along the same lines, there's a lot of tools out there for DevOps. And it also goes through, we're really trying to treat our environments as things that we can version control and make maintainable and make it almost under, we can keep it under lock and key almost, and we can share it. So some tools you can use in order to do those types of things and also to manage your environments is tools like Chef and Puppet. So when I talk about automation, it's no longer just functional automation. I see automation as a bigger picture thing where we're focusing on anything we can do in order to accelerate the development process, whether it's creating scripts to help create builds quicker of our applications or performance testing, anything like that. So it's no longer just functional testing. And here are two tools that constantly come up now when I do searches for, say, a QA engineer, and that's Chef and Puppet. I don't know if you could tell, but in the background, I've merged the trends for Indeed.com. And both these things are increasing in skills that what employers are looking for. And actually, Puppet for 2015, I think it was in the top 10 of all skills that employers are looking for. Puppet was one of those trends. So this is something, once again, that I'm going to focus on in 2016. I think that these are tools that, once again, it's no longer going to be just, it's a DevOps thing. I think if you're a part of development, if you're a tester or a developer, you're going to have to start supporting these types of technologies. And here's an example of that. So here's an actual job requirement within Indeed.com, and it's just for a standard QA engineer. And they have listed within the requirements Chef or Puppet and DevOps. And this is just an example of more and more QA engineer positions I've been seeing within the Boston area actually looking for this as a skill. So that's why I'm putting it on my learning plan for this year. You know, a lot of people know about Agile. It's been around for, what, 15, 20 years. But I think a subset of that is Agile testing. And I think that's something that's going to be growing more and more in the coming years. In the middle here, we have 2014, 2015 of people surveyed within the World Quality Report mentioning that they're using Agile testing principles. And the way I see Agile testing principles is that more and more QA people or testers are going to be using the same exact development tools and techniques that your developers are using. So the same IDEs, the same programming languages. And the reason for this is to help really facilitate better collaboration. Because testers and developers now are usually in sprints together and sprint teams together, they usually need to help one another. So it's a collaborative effort. And if you're using the same tools and the same languages, it just makes that collaboration that much easier. Now, there's pros and cons to this, and it's just this assumes that your developers really are going to participate in the testing effort. I think they're going to have to eventually. So if you're using the same tools as them, the same programming languages, the better off you'll be. It's not like the old days where a QA person would have a tool on their machine like WinRunner or QTP, and a developer would never install that on their machine, right? But now, because of tools like Selenium, where we can use the same languages as our developers, the same IDEs, it just makes it so much better for collaboration and getting a full team effort involved. So you really have more and more people contributing to the development effort, testing just being an activity, not just something that's done at the end. Everyone's responsible for quality in this type of framework, in this type of development cycle. And also, because developers are creating more code and we're moving towards DevOps principles like continuous integration, continuous builds, they need faster feedback to make sure that the code that they checked into the build didn't break anything. And the only way you really can get that quick feedback is to have automated tests. So these automated tests may not be full-blown GUI end-to-end tests, and they shouldn't be. It's probably going to be more unit tests, faster tests, headless tests. But nonetheless, it needs to be an automated test, and that's why developers really need to get involved. We need to make sure that they have this safety net that when they check things in, they get fast feedback within, say, 15 minutes to say, hey, you broke the build and you need to fix it. The problem with this is if you wait, the longer you wait to get this feedback to your developers, the harder it's going to be to fix that issue or to even know what they checked in that broke it. So the quicker you can write your test, the faster your test suite is, the better feedback your developers can get, and the quicker you can find those defects before it lingers on after, say, running your test overnight. So it really is an effort to create as many smart automated tests, headless tests, fast tests to get the feedback that your developers need. And it really requires a development collaboration with everyone involved. It's not just, oh, you're the tester, you do this. It's everyone has to do this. So this really goes towards more of a automation from the start perspective. And what I mean by that is automation from day one to make sure you're providing that feedback as fast as possible within this continuous development environment. So you really want to move from test automation to continuous test automation. And it's, like, again, it's not only just test automation. It's any kind of automation that can accelerate your development process. So like I said, I write a lot of little scripts in Python that just parses reports that make things quicker so that someone doesn't have to manually go in and look through reports. I have a Python script. You just double-click. It goes through, and it parses things, and it puts everything into one file that you double-click on and you're able to interact with. And those types of things also are going to be more and more important. So having a skill like that that's able to accelerate things through automation, not necessarily just test automation, I think is going to be a bigger and bigger trend in 2016 and beyond. So here's another example of a job requirement. And in here, I highlighted the quality across the software development lifecycle. So I just wanted to show that there's a lot more requirements within the Boston area where I've been looking for test automation engineers or just QA engineers to have the ability to create automated tests for continuous integration and continuous tests and continuous deployment, and be able to do it across the software development lifecycle. So it's unit testing, regression testing, functional testing, performance testing, and not even specific testing, just creating scripts to help promote the build to make that quicker. So it's just a growing trend I think everyone needs to be aware of. So another thing I've been seeing more and more of, like I said, this is not a newer technology, but more and more people I speak with all bring up behavior-driven development. And the reason for this is, you know, we really are becoming a customer-centric type delivery model where we really want to make sure that we're creating products and code and software that really wows our customer and that it's driven by our customer. It really is a customer experience focused type of testing that we want to focus on. And the one way to get that is to use something like behavior-driven development. Now, I've seen a lot of people that use this incorrectly. They use it just like an automation framework, and that's completely not the point of behavior-driven development. Behavior-driven development gives you the ability to speak about your requirements as early as possible within the software development lifecycle, before your developers even write any code, to make sure that you have scenarios written out to say, as a user, when I go to my application and when I do something, then I should get this result. And then you can talk about things before even coding it to say, well, is that really what the customer would do? Is that what they should be doing? And you could document them, share them with your customers. It's in an English-like syntax. You're able to talk to your product owners. There's no code involved. It's really low tech. It's just usually just in a text file. And it's just speaking about your requirements in an English-like syntax in a language that your users would understand. So this is really key because, like I said, the earlier you find bugs within your development lifecycle, the easier it's going to be to fix and the less money you'll spend later on. If you can catch something within these conversations, say, hey, this scenario is not correct. A real user would not do this, or have you thought about this scenario before a developer even codes it? You're going to save so much time. And a lot of times I know developers sometimes say, well, this is wasting my time. Why am I doing this? It's really, you're doing a lot of upfront work, but a lot of people don't realize that you're saving yourself a lot of back-end work because you don't want to get stuck in when you're developing the wrong thing over and over again and you're being told that's not correct or here's a bug and you have to do fixes and then do a rebuild and then do all these patches later on. You really are saving time upfront. And like I said, a lot of people I speak with, they're all using behavior-driven development. And if you search in job sites like Indeed.com, once again, behavior-driven development is a skill that a lot of companies are looking for. So here's just one example of a company where I work that's looking for someone that has behavior-driven development experience and that they're able to collaborate with developers to enhance the testing. So it really is, like I said, a collaborative effort, and behavior-driven development can actually get us there because rather than thinking about us and what we want to do, you start thinking about your user, having some customer empathy to say, what is our customer going to feel like when they use this application? And are we going to develop the right thing before you even write any code? It saves a lot of time, and I think this is a big, big win if you do it correctly. So another trend that I've seen, which I've been pleasantly surprised about, is back in the day, if you ever said anything about testing in front of a developer, their eyes would glaze over and they would just tune you completely out. But more and more people that I interview on Test Talks say these types of things. For example, Johan Halaby, he is the creator of the Rest Assured Java library that helps you test REST services. And he said, you know, he doesn't feel right if he doesn't have a test when he writes his product code because he wants to validate that he's written something and that he's written it correctly and that he knows he didn't break anything.
And also Matt Wynn.
He wrote the Cucumber book, and he's the main contributor to Cucumber, the Cucumber project. And he had a great quote about Edward Deming saying, you know, we need to stop doing what Edward Deming said. You know, let's make toast the American way. I'll burn it, and you'll scrape it later. Right? And that's exactly how it used to be with the silos. Developers create code, they throw it over the wall, and then QA people would test it and say, no, it's broken, throw it back over the wall. It's just like they were scratching off the burntness and just and redoing it. So if you create things up front first and have that good understanding, you don't have as much of this later on. So you really want to developers that have this mindset. If you have developers that are this old school, we don't do testing, or anytime they hear testing that they totally tune you out, I would question whether or not that person is the right fit for your company. And I think in order to move forward, you know, you need everyone on your team contributing to testing and automation, because it can't be just to one person on the team. Like I said, in a sprint team, mostly it's usually more developers than testers. So you need developers with that mindset that love to test, that are always testing that code, because they really care about the customer and they're really trying to make sure they catch issues before it gets out to production. So this is a Zephyr report, and it may not be too shocking to most people. This is probably most people on this call know this already, but it's clear that Selenium is the test tool that most people are using now with most companies I speak with. And if you do a search within Indeed.com or Dice.com for Selenium, you know, the search results are through the roof. And, you know, what's funny about this report is that maybe a few years ago it would have been flipped. You probably would have seen more people using tools like Quick Test Professional and Unified Functional Testing, and then less people using Selenium. And to be honest, it's really not a fair comparison, because Selenium is only for browser-based testing. I know a lot of us on this call, that's maybe all that we do is web-based testing, but there's a lot of enterprise companies that do more than web-based testing, and so you still need these other tools to help you with that. But it's just an indicator of how shocking things can change at any given moment, and why you need to be really keeping up on this, because a few years ago, if you saw this, you probably would have seen QTP. Maybe you would have been a Quick Test Professional expert, and if you never looked at this every year and you just continue just to focus on QTP and not Selenium, you would really be doing a disservice to yourself. So it's just something you want to keep track of over time. So another trend I've been seeing, though, is before, where it used to be Quick Test Professional was the tool leader, and then it became Selenium, now I'm seeing something a little more interesting, and that is, and I know a lot of people may not like this or don't agree with it, is the morphing almost of Selenium with vendor-based tools. So Selenium is not a testing tool. It's just an API. It's just an SDK that you pull into your Java or C Sharp, and you create tests using this API. But it's not necessarily a test tool per se. You need to create a lot of code up front to get the functionality that you normally would get with a tool like Quick Test Professional or Test Complete. So what I've been seeing more and more vendors doing is they're starting to actually embrace Selenium, which is kind of mind-blowing. But, you know, Test Complete maybe a year and a half ago came out with a way where within Test Complete you can call your Selenium test. And they also started pumping up being able to use Python to create Test Complete test. So they're starting to work on more and more integration with Selenium. HP maybe 6 months ago came out with a new tool called LeanFT, Lean Functional Testing. And what this is essentially an SDK, an API just like Selenium that you can bring into, say, if you're developing an Eclipse using Java, you could just pull in, you can import the LeanFT mobile Java SDK and be able to integrate and test mobile apps, be able to test thick client apps. But you're able to program it within your developer languages. And also you can use it with Selenium. Because it's just an SDK, you could have a test suite that's already created within Selenium. But say you needed to interact with some thick client applications, you could just pull in this LeanFT SDK and start creating scripts for those thick client applications all within the same framework. And also gives you support for reporting and going back and forth between Selenium. So it has ways where you can run tests easier and faster. So you can leverage the vendor tool and still use Selenium at the same time, where before it was either one or the other. A lot of this, though, is not, I don't think it's through the love of vendors loving Selenium. I think they're being forced this way, and the reason why I think they're almost being forced is that I talked to Jim Evans. Jim Evans is one of the lead contributors to the Selenium C# project. He also created the IE driver, and he mentioned that the W3C is working on a web driver standard. So this is a standard that all the companies look to make sure that they're following when they're developing software. And so once the Selenium driver becomes a W3 standard, most companies or all companies are going to have to support it, because it's going to become a standard. And when you have a standard, you want to make sure you're following it. And all browsers then are going to have their own web driver implementation. So actually, if you have IE, if you ever tested IE with Selenium, it's been kind of tough. I think once this happens, once IE has their own implementations, their own web driver standard that they're following and implementing, I think automation might get a little bit easier. So that's a good thing all around. So here's a report from Gartner. and it's called their Magic Quadrant for Software Testing Automation. It's a report they do almost every year. I think they're kind of off with this date because I think Selenium is now, and I think everyone is using Selenium now. But they say that, you know, it's going to become a standard where vendors that don't support it are going to become marginalized. And that's why I think we've been seeing more and more companies start to be able to integrate with Selenium. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. It's something that they're going to have to do. And I think it's going to help a Selenium engineer that starting off and they don't have to write a reporting mechanism from scratch. They can leverage another tool and get that without having to code it up themselves. So here's an example. Peter Kim, I spoke with him on Test Talks. He actually uses Telerik Test Studio, and he uses it basically for its object repository and being able to identify objects and run tests quicker and faster. And here's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, of how vendor tools will be starting to integrate more and more with Selenium. It really gives you a way that you can write tests faster and more scalable and leverage a vendor's expertise already and still be able to use Selenium and the languages that your developers use, basically. So here's another growing trend I've been seeing more and more of. I know someone in the pre-questions asked something about how you handle UX testing, saying UX is getting more and more relevant in development of new products. Is it possible to automate this? Well, something I've been hearing more and more about is visual validation testing. And visual validation testing really is done from the perspective of your users, where you want to look for visual bugs in your application. And it's different than functional testing tool is that it was developed specifically for visual-based UI, UX type testing, and that it's almost image comparison type, where it looks at an image, you get a baseline, you run your test against, and then when you rerun your test, it compares itself against that baseline. So it also saves a lot of time. So rather than having a bunch of assertions saying, make sure this image is here and it's this color and that this font is this big, it just looks at your whole page if you set it to look at your whole page, and it will spot any visual differences when you rerun that test. And this is a big time saver. And I've seen this actually, I've seen companies implement this where it finds bugs that even your manual testers couldn't find. It just allows you to create tests quicker and faster, especially if you need to run your tests against different mobile devices. Visual validation testing can help you with that. Just get you more coverage. And like I said, because we want to automate as many things as possible, as soon as possible, using a tool like visual validation, like, say, Appley Tools, really will help accelerate it better and to get the functionality you need to, in order to get that UX-type coverage that you want. It also lets you know if any elements are overlapping, so it's just a big time saver. So, example, Richard Bradshaw, he's the friendly tester, most of you know him. He tweeted out recently, you know, he's been really impressed with Appley Tools. He thinks it's a great solution for visual checking. He's big on visual checking on what automation can be used for, and visual validation is one of those things that it makes sense to automate at this level, because if you're using a tool like Appley Tools, it tends to be very robust and doesn't give you as many false positives as you may have had in the past with, say, another image-based technology. Also, Richard and people like Dave Heppner have been blogging about this for like the past year. So more and more people are just bringing up visual validation testing. So if you haven't heard of it before, if you're not aware of it, I think it's definitely worth checking out, because I think it could help a lot of companies that may be doing something manually now because they think they can't be automated, but there's newer technology out there that can help you with these efforts. So definitely check that out. Eventually, what I always get asked is, okay, Joe, if I'm a QA engineer, if I'm a manual tester, do I need to learn a programming language? And if so, what language should I use? So, I mean, the question really is, I guess the answer really is, it depends, right? But I think that at this point, you do need to know some sort of programming language, or you need to be sophisticated enough to know to look at some code and at least understand what's going on there. So here's a chart by Tybo Software. They do this every month. It's basically just they check the popularity of a programming language every month. So I just pulled this for January, and the top tool is Java, the top programming language. Most people are using Java, and I just use this as to determine what is the most popular programming languages out there, so that if I want to be more employable, if I want to work on more projects, I try to focus on the ones that have the most popularity. Your goal may be different, but that's my goal, so that's what I look towards. And also, it's good to know what else may be up and coming, what's growing. So if you were to force me to choose, okay, Joe, what language would you start with? Again, I would say it doesn't matter. Learn one language, and once you learn the syntax of that language, once you learn the underlying principles, It's just a matter of learning the syntax of another language in order to get up to speed with it. But you would understand all the programming principles already. So just select the programming language and go with it. But if I was to choose, I definitely would choose Java just because of its popularity. I also would choose Python. And, you know, there's some people that would just love JavaScript, and that's something I've been seeing more and more of. So here's Dave Hefner. Dave Hefner wrote the Selenium Guidebook. He also has a very popular newsletter called Elemental Selenium. And he did an analysis of popular downloads for Selenium's language bindings. He noticed last year maybe 65% of the downloads for Selenium were for Java. So that's another reason why I say if you were going to get started, if you could choose any language, I might start with Java, just because you have a lot of resources out there already. I also really like Python, so that's another thing I would look towards. Python later on, as you'll see, I think is going to be a growing language because of the types of things it can handle. So just some things you can take a look at to just gauge, is this worthwhile? Is this something I should spend my time with? You know, time, you don't have an infinite resource of time, so you really want to focus on the things that are popular and things you think are going to help you accelerate your career. So this is why I mentioned JavaScript. Here's Moshe Milman. A lot more applications are using things like AngularJS, so there's a lot of front-end Java developers out there now. Also, Dave Hefner has mentioned that he's talked to a lot of companies that have used Java, but because a lot of the front-end developers, they're all really interested in JavaScript frameworks, and they've all seen an explosion in growth in the JavaScript framework usage that a lot of companies are using. And I think that's something that's only going to accelerate. There's a lot of different JavaScript library frameworks. Just think that it just makes the front-end developer able to automate things quicker and faster. And if you can get, once again, a developer to start creating automated tests on their own and not have a person or a group that handles it, I think the better off you're going to be. So I definitely see this as a growing trend. I've spoken to a few people at different conferences, and a lot of the developers are all talking about JavaScript frameworks. So it's just something that you should have on your radar this year. And maybe if you're choosing a language from the start and you don't want to use a language like Java, maybe it's JavaScript that you take a look at. Okay, so this is something that I struggle with personally, and that is environments. So if you're working in a sprint team and they're doing continuous builds, a lot of times you have many different environments that you need to deploy to. So you may have a development environment. And if you have multiple sprint teams, say you have 10 sprint teams, you may have 10 developer sprint team environments, right? And then you have your, say, your continuous integration environment where you go to, and you have all these different pipelines. And then you have production, and you may have a staging. And a lot of times the developer will say, well, you know, works on my machine, it's not working in CI, it must be something with the environment. So there's some technologies out there that I think really help test automation engineers to set up and manage the application a lot better. And, you know, with continuous build virtualization and cloud testing platform capabilities, moving towards DevOps, this virtualization technology I think really can help developers and testers be able to spin up environments really quickly, clean environments very fast, and tear them down and not have to worry about maintenance or going to another group to asking, I need these other machines. It just allows you to create environments quicker and faster and cleaner, and I think it saves a lot of time. And also with tools like Vagrant, it's almost like you can clone your CI BDD, your CI environment, or your production environment. You can version control that, and you can share it with the developers. So when your developers are developing, they actually are kind of developing against the production environment. So when it does finally get to production, they're not caught off guard. So using technologies like Vagrant and Docker, I've been hearing about it all over the place, and I think it's definitely something that testers and developers need to learn more about and start utilizing. Because ultimately, if we use it correctly, I think it'll help accelerate the development process and make things more maintainable from an environment perspective. And that tends to be a sticky point sometimes, especially for testing. So this is Steve Hazel from Sauce Labs. And he actually brought up that he thinks that a big trend coming forward with technology is virtualization, containerization, anything that you can really isolate a piece of code from its surrounding environment. He sees that as something that more and more companies are going to be developing with. And Sauce Labs speaks with a lot of other companies, and I speak with a lot of different guests on Test Talks, and they're all saying the same thing. A lot of people are mentioning virtualization and containerization over and over again. So if you haven't done anything with it, I would definitely put it on your learning plan, because I think it's something that we're all going to be dealing with in the future. Also, once again, when I do a search for jobs within the Boston area for testers, developers, a lot of requirements now are coming back with continuous integration and also experience with tools like Docker or Docker-based technology as being a plus. So once again, I think it's worthwhile to learn and look into, and I think it's going to help your testing automation efforts if you can get a Docker environment up and running just to help speed up your development process and your testing. Also, Michael Sage, he works for BlazeMeter. He does a lot with different virtualization technologies, a lot of performance testing, and he sees how Docker really gives them the flexibility to create test environments, to spin them up really quickly, to throw them away when they're done, and not to have to manage it, you know, have to go through a QA lab or something to manage all these environments. He can just spin up a lab on the fly, run his test, tear it down. It just makes things a lot more flexible and a lot easier. So just another shout out for virtualization using something like Docker. Also, Jeff Susner wrote a book on delivering quality, delivering in DevOps. He's a big proponent of DevOps. And he recommended Vagrant just because, like I said, a lot of times you have a developer saying it works on my machine, so that's something wrong with your environment. But if you can actually version control the exact environment you'll be running in production, and your developers are testing against that, they'll find issues quicker rather than later. And so tools like technology like Vagrant helps accelerate that and make it easier. So a lot of people have been hearing about Internet of Things, I'm sure. I just think that Internet of Things, it has to take off eventually. I think it is taking off now. We're seeing a lot of technologies, embedded technologies, that are really headless, that have an API, that speak over HTTP and communicate, but they don't have necessarily a traditional GUI or front end. And there's some estimates that's saying in 2020 there's going to be 50 billion of these types of headless objects connected to the Internet. And so with that comes a lot of different issues. One of the top issues that most companies reported on that World Quality Report was security. And so with Internet of Things, these headless type technologies, the way we look at security is going to change. And a lot of times, you know, security testing really hasn't, I don't think it has been staying up to pace with other development processes. But I know a lot of companies really are looking at security testing just because of actually also it's when someone is hacked, when a company is hacked. It really is a big news item, and companies want to avoid that as at all possible. And also, if you work for a regulated environment like healthcare, if you get hacked and your application gets hacked, your actual patient could get compromised. You don't want people hacking into a pacemaker, right, and shocking them or doing weird things like that. So security, Internet of Things, I think really is going to accelerate the need for better tools for security testing. If you're not familiar with security testing, there's a lot of information online, especially OWASP. OWASP is a great resource to go to for learning more about different vulnerabilities that are popular and ways you can work around them or ways you can kind of make sure that you have things in place to keep your environment more secure. But a more important thing I think came up out of this is I was speaking to Jonathan Wright. Jonathan Wright works at Hitachi. He's a well-known test engineer. And, you know, he brought up a great point. When we talk Internet of Things, a lot of times we're talking more about the hardware than the software. So I think a lot of people are going to have to stop focusing on how do we test hardware? And that's going to be quite a change for testers because we've all focused mostly on software. So maybe hardware is something else we may have to look into. I'm not sure how wild I would go with this, but it's just something to be aware of that as we go more and more into these Internet of Things type things that are embedded within sensors, knowing hardware, knowing a little bit about hardware, I think can only benefit. And here's some examples. I know maybe it's just the area I live in near Boston, but we have a lot of robotics companies around where I live, and a lot of them are actually looking for people that have experience working with embedded systems for control, navigation, manipulation, sensors, and video. And I really think the Internet of Things is really going to drive this even more. So it's just something maybe to have on your radar in 2016 and just to keep checking to see, is this really a trend that's growing? And if it is, maybe in 2017, 2018, you make it part of a hardcore learning plan. So here's another interesting thing that I learned from someone, one of my guests. This is Brian Akin. He actually is an embedded software developer. He does a lot of embedded development. And he brought up the point that there's a new thing called MicroPython that just came out that is almost as fast as C++. So I think this has been a barrier for most people getting into embedded testing, embedded technology is having to learn C++. But if MicroPython actually catches on, I think it makes it a lot more accessible to more people. And if more people can get involved, I just think it's just an opportunity that people can be aware of that as Internet of Things grow, how do we test these things? What tools do we use? What languages do we use? And MicroPython may be one of those languages that helps us test headless technologies or embedded type technologies. When I first started doing testing, really one of the first projects I've worked on was performance testing. And this is one of the things that I haven't actually seen change over time with Agile. So really with continuous performance testing, I'm seeing more teams starting to explore, as we work in our sprints every 2 weeks, can we run a performance test to get a baseline of our performance test to see how things are performing rather than waiting to the very end before we release to the customer. So I see definitely a trend towards continuous testing. I know that our user expectations have gotten more and more where they expect things to be faster and faster, so it's definitely something to be aware of. Michael Sage also recommended that he works for BlazeMeter. He's seeing more and more companies really trying to find a way how they can get continuous performance testing as part of the continuous integration environments, because it really is one of the last older technologies or the older methods that people are still following their way into the end to do performance testing rather than earlier. Want to do things earlier, so I see continuous performance testing really becoming a new trend. One of those things is Torres. Torres is a way that allows you to use it on top of JMeter, and it makes the JMeter a little more accessible and easier to use. So here's one tool I've been looking at that I've been hearing more and more about. As I mentioned, microservices. Microservices is just a way to really create smaller, more specific type of functionality. And this really plays well into, say, when you're developing, being able to really focusing on one piece of functionality so you can put in your continuous integration environment. If anything changes, you know what changed because it was only in this one small piece that you changed. It's just more and more people, more I speak with, are mentioning microservices as a new trend for their architecting their software into really smaller, extremely focused services that when they come together, they make up an application, but you know, you're not necessarily certain how your customers may be consuming these things. And so here's Neil Manzilla. He works for Runscope. And he just mentioned how API testing he sees becoming more and more important because of microservices, more and more companies doing this type of development in the future. And so a lot of people have heard about shift left, but I'm not sure how many people have heard about shift right. And really with shift right, I think is back in the day, you'd wait to the end to do performance testing. And when you did, you never did it in production. But nowadays, I think more and more companies need to start focusing on not only doing performance testing in production, but also doing monitoring of your environments within production so you can be proactive rather than waiting for customers to report issues. So Jeff Sussner mentioned that because you need to get feedback for your customers as soon as possible, and your customers usually sometimes interact with your software different than you would when you were testing them within your development environments, that you really need to get a handle on how things are working within production. So really doing more performance testing in production is a growing trend I've been seeing. But more so, I've been seeing more and more companies really investing in monitoring, doing a more predictive analysis. This is from a dashboard I've seen at one of the conferences I went to recently. And it was almost like Minority Report, where they're able to, in their mobile apps, know what areas are about to experience an issue. Say someone just pushed out a new build, and they can know before the users report an issue that, uh-oh, we're going to notice issues here soon with response time. Let's roll it back before our users actually notice. So more predictive analysis tools, more monitoring in production, definitely a growing trend. Todd Gardner from TrackJS just brought up that you really don't know how your application is going to work until it's in the wild, how your users are going to use it. So that's why you really need to invest in monitoring. No longer is it just we're going to wait, do testing and performance testing in development cycle. It's now after we even release it, we need to be proactive and make sure that we're getting that feedback sooner rather than later. So autonomous agents, we've all been hearing more and more about Google cars and drones. And I think this is actually going to be a more and more growing trend. I know the FAA came out with recent regulations about actually drones and how you have to register them now. But the problem with these things is they have a tendency to cause problems when they're in the wild. So we need to be even more focused on testing. No longer is 95% acceptable. You don't want drones falling out of the air with the 5% rate that it's going to happen. You're going to need 99.9% coverage or confidence in knowing that your applications are going to behave correctly once they are released in the wild. And so I just see testing becoming more and more important because of these type of mission-critical situations where you have drones and cars that you don't want them crashing into people and really causing issues. So it's something that another trend I think we need to keep our eyes on. And speaking of eyes, virtual reality, Mark Zuckerberg recently came out with this quote saying, he's working on virtual reality because he thinks it is the next major computing communication platform. But if you've noticed, the Rift is now available for pre-order, but it's around $600. And I don't think that's very accessible right now. Maybe over time it will be. So I just think we need to start thinking more about virtual reality. How are we going to test these things? And I think a more important thing to keep aware of is Google Cardboard, which anyone could create offline based on plans or a template. It may seem like a toy now, but I think Google has the leverage to tell manufacturers, hey, we really need your devices, your sensors to be better caliber so we can work better with Google Cardboard in order to get this experience to our users. I think this is more accessible to more people. And so if you think about that, Google Cardboard uses your actual smartphone that's in your pocket. So I think smartphone development and testing is going to become even more important. I know this has probably been on everyone's radar for a long time, mobile testing. But I think with the Oculus Rift coming out and more people getting interested in this, because it's so expensive, maybe people start with Google Glass and they're going to need a cell phone to do that or a smartphone. So it's definitely something we need to start looking into and investing in now. So the whole point of this presentation really was about automation through the whole pipeline, not just test automation. Automation from the beginning all the way to the end, getting your customers' feedback, and then reiterating on that from the beginning all the way to the end. So it's a continuous cycle of automation throughout the pipeline, just so we're developing and releasing quickly and fast, and quality is being delivered to our customer. So a lot of people have asked me, so is QA dead because we have to do all this automation practices and development? And everyone I speak to, here's a few quotes as examples. QA is not dead. Lots of organizations really need QA resources. It's almost like we're getting elevated if you're a QA person, because now you have to oversee the whole development lifecycle. And usually a QA person, type person, or a tester is the type of person that knows every piece of the pie all the way from the beginning to the end. So it's more of like an oversight shepherding process where we have to lead our teams through this transformation where we're involved from the beginning all the way to the end. So QA is not dead, and it's something that you should be proud of if you have these skills. It's just that you need to be technologically more savvy, I think, in the future, and we just need to up all our skills at some point. But that QA is not going away.
For links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/87. And while you're there, make sure to click on the more info link under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.